This is She Is Radiant, a podcast to help you embrace motherhood in all its radiance. I'm Janaea. I'm a faith-filled woman, wife, and mom of three. I'm knee-deep in the mom thing with a very full house and loving every bit of it. Motherhood these days gets mixed reviews, so I'm here to give you mine. I'll shed light on all of it, my own experiences, trending topics, and conversations with like-minded women whom I admire. She is radiant, and yes, I mean you. Welcome back to She is Radiant with Janaea McClure, the podcast where we embrace motherhood in all of its radiance. Today we are talking about sleep training. I know it's a very sensitive topic, but we are not going to shy away from it. If you're here, you're probably not getting much sleep and you want to learn about all the things sleep training so that you can get back to having a restful night's sleep and so that your baby can have restorative sleep. And it is possible, I promise you. I promise you. All three of my kids sleep 12 hours a night, and you can get there. This too can be you. So I just want to thank you for being back with me today. Thanks for joining me for episode one. Really excited that you're here. If you noticed, I got some new hardware, this microphone. I'm so excited about it. So thank you for joining me back on the podcast. Before we hop right into it, I've got a few announcements. I want to go into a trending topic of the week, and then we're going to hop into sleep training. We're going to go into the methodology of sleep training, my sleep training testimony. Then we've got a ton of questions to dive into and answer. I got so many questions about sleep training, and I'm going to take the time to answer every single one of them. Because I know you're curious about what sleep training is, what it can do for you and your family, and why you'll never look back once you've got the core concepts down. I know it's a really hard topic to go into. Just want to start this episode off by saying that this episode is sponsored by my small business, Jade and Kai. My husband and I own a small business of baby essentials for you and your little besties. Go check us out at jadeandkai.com or on Instagram at jadeandkaico. We've got some exciting announcements coming from our small business beginning next month, so you don't want to miss it. Another announcement that I want to go over, I am currently collaborating with an organization called Conceivabilities for its Milk Bank Challenge amidst the national formula shortage. So if you have any breast milk that you're willing to donate to infants and families in need, you can go over to my Instagram profile, click the Milk Bank Challenge link at the top of my bio. And right now, Conceivabilities is running a promo campaign. If you send them proof that you've donated breast milk to any participating milk bank across the country, they will send you a $250 Amazon gift card to reward you for your generosity and to help this wonderful cause of donating breast milk amidst the national formula shortage. Really awesome campaign. I'm so honored to be a part of it. I've participated as well, and I'm so happy that you are considering doing so. And then last announcement before we jump right into it, I just kicked off a community on my Instagram page called Radiant Women. It's my subscriber community. Right now I'm running a promo of $249 a month to join my Radiant Women community. Some benefits of joining the community include prioritize social chats, monthly AMAs, prioritize messaging. We go over exclusive content and topics that I post just for my community, a lot more one-on-one time. And I also do PR, goodie, freebie giveaways for any gifts that I receive in the mail that me or my family don't necessarily benefit from or that I think someone else could benefit from. So I do regular PR giveaways and just a smaller, tight-knit community of women. Well, and we can talk about topics such as breastfeeding, motherhood, anything you want. And I prioritize talking to this group and messages and questions that you might have over things like Instagram reel comments, things that I might be more prone to miss. So I launched this community in hopes that we could have a more tight-knit conversation. And then any private DMs that you send me as well, I'll prioritize. If you have questions about a particular topic, if you want to talk about breastfeeding or breast milk supply, things like that. Those are just some of the benefits of my Radiant Women community. And that will be over on my Instagram page at Janaea McClure. All right, so let's talk about some life updates. I'm trying to think about what has happened since the last time we were here. We recently hired a part-time nanny to help us out around the house, which is great. I am the kind of person that really doesn't like accepting help, even if I'm paying for it. But we found a wonderful nanny to help us care for our son part-time while we're both working full-time. She is wonderful. I do not know what we were doing before this. So we're so happy to have her. And the fact that she has come into our home and she treats Kenzo like he's her own and he loves her, it just warms my little heart. And I do not know how we will ever change this setup. I think I just want to have it forever and ever and ever. It's funny because my older two kids, we did daycare with them, and we loved the home daycare that we had them in. We consider them family now. But I don't know. I think there's just something about the last baby. I just want to have him home for longer. And my husband and I were talking about this. He was just like, well, I want him to have the same experience that they had. And I don't disagree, but I think part of me is just like, oh, I want him to be closer to home now that I'm back working full time. And I just want to be able to like have him in our home. Just, I don't know. I'm just trying to cherish this baby stage as long as possible. And who knows, maybe we will transition him into like a daycare setting eventually, once we want him to get a little more of like the baby socialization. But for now, this setup is really, really nice. And it's part time. And it's something that we're able to kind of afford in our budget. So it's a really great setup. And I'm always happy to share about our experience with a nanny. We did it once before for a few months with our daughter, and it was really tight on our budget. And we had a pretty good experience with it, and I kind of forgot how great of a setup it was. And so this time around, we're so grateful to have found someone that we trust, and to again find someone that we trust. And the fact that he has taken to her right away, and she's so helpful around the house, and just to be able to, you know, have someone you can trust to take care of your baby while you can focus on other things that are still important to making your life function is such a blessing. So that's one update. Another thing that's happened since the last time we were here, I hosted a little bit of a girls' night here at my house. It's so funny because I don't usually pour into my hobbies outside of, you know, content creation or small business ownership. But I am a bit of a crafty person, and I love to do arts and crafts, and I've tried to do that more with my kids. Although crafting with kids is really more like a test of your patience and a test of your anxiety. But crafting and doing arts and crafts in general is something that I've always loved to do. And so I thought it would be fun to host a little bit of a craft night with all of my closest friends that live in the area and make it like spooky Halloween themed. So I did that, and it was so much fun. I totally underestimated how fun it would be to have everyone here trying to do arts and crafts all together. The wine was poured, the drinks were ingested, we had a lot of food. I don't think I've laughed that hard in a long, long time. And it was one of those things where you bring different friend groups together, and sometimes that doesn't always work out, but I was just so overjoyed with having everyone in everyone's space and having everyone in my home that it was such a perfect night. Everyone gelled together so great. And I could just tell that everyone kind of needed that. Everyone was in need of like a solid girls' night just to talk about everything, anything and everything. I had friends that I had met at work. I had friends that I had met through my husband that are now my friends. I had my new neighbor friends, and it was just a joyous evening. We were just all so happy to be together, and everyone got along really well. And I think at the end of the night, everyone was like, oh, we have to do this again. So I think I'm going to do another craft night for Christmas. It was just so much fun to be able to be in everyone's presence and do arts and crafts, as silly as that sounds. So those are a couple life updates. Now I want to go into a trending topic of the week. And I'm pretty sure that all of my trending topics for every episode are going to be around a TikTok topic, because I'm always on TikTok and I love the conversation on TikTok. So a trending thing that I've seen on TikTok lately is this woman who shared a video. She is kind of in the thick of her postpartum experience. And the conversation is around the fact that she had found 17 diapers just laying around in her home. So she was like, I'm going to go and see how many diapers are just laying around my house. You can tell that her house itself is not, it's not a disaster. It was maybe a little bit messy. I gathered that she was in kind of the early months of postpartum. She did say that she's solo parenting. I don't know if her partner was like, is in an occupation where they're not home a lot, but she's doing it for the first time by herself. And so she got a plastic bag and was just kind of filming herself go around the house and picking up all the diapers that she could find. And they weren't like open, messy diapers. They were just diapers that you kind of fold up into a ball and you just put there. And I'm guilty of doing that before. So she went around her house. She's got a pretty big house and she found 17 of them. It's kind of a lot, but unfortunately, the result of that video, after having gone viral, garnered a really big response. A lot of it was negative. Everyone calling her a horrible mom, everyone calling her disgusting, that she was filthy, that she was making a really unsafe environment for her child. And she herself kind of looked pretty put together. So honestly, it just made me feel so sad that she had gotten that type of response for something that is really just a part of being a new mom. Sometimes you let certain areas go more than others. And the comment section, they just tore her apart in this comment section. They were calling her disgusting. They were saying that she's just so horrid and awful. And luckily, there was another half of kind of the mob that came for her in her defense, saying that, you know, not everyone knows like the really dark sides of postpartum and it shows. And I totally 100% agree with that. Because when you are in the thick of postpartum, there are certain things that you see and there are other irrational sides of yourself that you really don't see. And it was just so disappointing to see a lot of people not give this woman grace in what is a really, really tough time for new mothers. That first 3 or more months of being a new mom in the thick of postpartum. And it shows up in ways for some people that it might not show up for others. For me, it was just really debilitating postpartum anxiety and not ever wanting to leave the house, not ever wanting anyone to hold or touch my baby. And this was peak COVID, so it was really, really heightened. But not ever wanting anyone to come and help for fear of her getting sick. So really awful, dark times. And I'm sure this woman, this mom doesn't think that 17 diapers lying around her home is ideal. I think I applaud her for being so vulnerable to show her reality of postpartum. And I think it's just really awful that we have gotten to a point as a society where we can't talk about the really hard, real sides of postpartum. I can't even really say that it's ever been something that a lot of women do talk about. There are moments in my first postpartum journey, which I would describe as my hardest, that I will never want to repeat. Those are moments that I will never, ever want to go back to, and moments that I don't even like going back to myself or with Maurice. And it's that hard. You're not sleeping, you're not eating super well. And so as a result of that viral video, many of the positive responses from women that have come in her defense have been, my 17 diapers during postpartum the equivalent of my 17 diapers was this. People just sharing really raw and vulnerable stories about their time during their postpartum months and the things that they never expected themselves to get to. And just in her defense, and I'm so grateful for those women because we already feel so much shame as moms, and to even a lot of the women that say like, don't mom guilt or don't mom shame are the ones that are coming and shaming this woman for showing a very real reality. 17 diapers is 17 diaper changes. And the fact that she, you know, didn't take 5 seconds to throw it away, who cares? Who cares? That baby is changed. That baby is clean. That baby probably can't even crawl around to go and pick up those diapers. So I don't know. I was just shocked at the response. And I feel so bad because she's now saying, oh, now everyone's calling me the 17 diaper mom. And I feel so bad for her because it takes one viral video to get canceled on the internet or to get really bad internet fame. And so I just wanted to take the time to applaud her for her vulnerability and for shedding light on how hard the postpartum experience can be. Because there are so many stories that women in their postpartum experience will not ever share. And that's really sad, and myself included. So I applaud her, whoever she is. Now let's go into the topic of the week. I know you've been waiting for it. We are going to talk about sleep training. If you have been with me for any amount of time, you know that we are a sleep training family. And I say that so unapologetically. We are going to peel back the layers of this ginormous onion, okay? Because sleep training in itself can be a pretty taboo topic. It can be a really sensitive topic for a lot of families. A lot of people are really against sleep training methods or sleep training as a whole, and I fully recognize that. And if you are one of those people, I totally respect that opinion, but I would like you to come into this conversation with a bit of an open mind. I want you to hear out how sleep training has changed our perspective of how our children learn how to do things. I want you to hear me out in terms of what it's done for our family and how it's benefited not just our kids, but ourselves and our entire family unit, how it's improved our health as an entire family. And I just want you to come into this with a bit of an open mind. And if you are here out of desperation and you want sleep, I am here to tell you that it is possible to get there again. And I hear you. I see you. You are probably in a spot where you are exhausted to the point of, am I ever going to get back to any semblance of normalcy, any semblance of feeling like myself again? And yes, you are. And it is so possible, and you can get there, and sleep training can help you get there. And so if you're here, I just want you to be with me in this conversation and look at it from the angles that I'm going to come at it from. And hopefully by the end of this, you'll be energized by the idea of sleep training. You'll understand it a bit better because let me tell you, before we made the leap into sleep training, we were in a really, really bad spot with our first baby, with our daughter. We were not sleeping more than 45 minutes at a time, or me especially, for the first 6 or 7 months of her life. And I don't want to say that sleep training is the solution for everyone. There are a lot of families that can successfully choose methods like co-sleeping or bed sharing, and it works for them. I am not here to have a conversation about co-sleeping in this episode. it's just a method that has never worked for our family. It's not something that has ever worked for us. We did do it for a little while. It wasn't something we enjoyed doing. It's something that I never really felt super comfortable or confident with. And so we knew that long term, that would not be sustainable for us. And so I'm here to talk about the method that did work for us and got us our sleep back and has given our kids the ability to do it on their own, do it independently, and get really solid night's sleep. All three of our kids sleep 12 hours a night. Well, my four-year-old's now more like 11 hours. Her sleep needs have changed a little bit, but they are able to put themselves to sleep, being wide awake, laid down right awake. They're able to put themselves back to sleep if they wake up in the middle of the night, and they're able to sleep long and restoratively throughout the night. This includes naps. They're able to apply those skills to nap time, and they're able to go back to that foundation after things like sleep regressions or sicknesses. Teaching independent sleep and building good sleep habits through sleep training has saved us as a family. And I'm going to unpack this in bit by bit. And we're going to go slow, and then we're going to go into my sleep training testimony, the method that we used, a pretty good overview into what we did and how we did it. And then we're going to go into some questions that you've submitted about sleep training. Okay. So what is sleep training? And I'm going to explain this. I geek out about this topic a lot. So I'm going to give you kind of my definition of sleep training. So sleep training is the act of teaching and helping your baby learn how to develop independent sleep skills. So what is independent sleep? The ability to fall asleep and put yourself to sleep, put yourself back to sleep, be able to connect your sleep cycles and know what to do without the reliance on sleep crutches or sleep aids. So things like rocking to sleep or nursing to sleep or things that require you as the parent to intervene. Your baby knows how to do it themselves. And if you think about it, that takes away so much of your physical and mental exhaustion and also gives your baby the confidence and the ability to do so by themselves so that they can apply it to many different situations. Why is sleep training such a sensitive topic? Well, you can guess, right? So sleep, just like any skill that your child's going to have to use, it comes with a bit of protest, right? So sleep training, I'm not going to put it lightly, will involve some kind of crying or protest. And I want you to keep those two words kind of interchangeable. Protest and crying are the same thing. Your baby is not able to talk, right? So how do they communicate? They goo, they ga, they cry, right? So crying is a baby's form of communication. And I totally respect the perspective that, you know, allowing some crying, it's a sensitive topic, that it's, you know, it's not something that you like to hear. It's not something you don't like to hear your baby cry or be uncomfortable. So I totally understand that. And that's actually something that was really hard for me to get over before choosing to sleep train, before being in alignment with my husband about this being the solution for us to get our sleep back, our restoration back, to be able to be the best parents that we could be for our kids. So it's sensitive because there is crying involved, and many people see that as neglecting your child or ignoring your child or not responding to your child. But you just got to understand that when they're going to learn anything in life, there's going to be a bit of discomfort. I know some people might disagree with, you know, well, you know, we shouldn't be teaching, our baby shouldn't be learning how to do something at that young of an age. And that's where I personally disagree, because I think this skill is one of the first skills that a baby is capable of learning, and for the benefit of them, for the benefit of restorative sleep. And if you think that you waking up every hour is uncomfortable, it's probably also uncomfortable for your baby, right? And I want you to not think about nutrition needs right now, okay? So we're gonna touch on that a little bit later. So before we go into the actual how and going into that step by step, I want to talk about my sleep training story and where we were at and why we decided to sleep train. Before we decided to take the leap, I was not sleeping more than 45 minutes to an hour at a time. My mental health was shot. I was not sleeping. I was really irritable. I had really bad postpartum rage, postpartum anxiety. And once I slept again after we sleep trained, I realized, oh, the common denominator of all of those things was the fact that I wasn't sleeping. And it was the fact that I was nursing my daughter to bed every night or rocking her to sleep every night. My back pain was awful. I was not getting the sleep and the rest that I needed to be the present, mentally clear mom that I needed to be for my baby. And so we were just stuck in that vicious cycle for about 5 or 6 months before we decided to actually do something about it. And I had not known anything about sleep training or building independent sleep skills whatsoever. I didn't know about laying down drowsy but awake, about how to feed baby when they're wide awake and not feeding to sleep. All of those things I was just so clueless about. And so we just kind of got trapped in the associative sleep method. So my daughter would need me to fall asleep. She would need to nurse on me, or she would need me to rock her to sleep. And then I would transfer her, holding her and then putting her in the crib. That's not sustainable whatsoever for us. And so we were just like, we need to change this. I had gotten to a point where I was up in her room maybe 6 to 8 times a night, just putting her back to sleep, putting her back to sleep. And I was like, why is she waking up so often? Why is she waking up so frequently? Why is she so hungry? And it wasn't the fact that she was hungry. It was the fact that she associated sleep with me. So whenever she woke up, because, you know, your sleep cycles as a human, you kind of go up and down. You wake up multiple times a night, and you might not realize it because you as an adult can connect your sleep cycles. A baby cannot. A baby cannot connect their sleep cycles like that. So whenever they wake up, they're looking for mommy, they're looking for daddy, because that's how they fell asleep to begin with. They were either nursing or they were being rocked, and they wake up, oh, and that association is not there. I'm going to cry. Think about how many times that's going to happen per night. That's what was happening to us. I was at the point where I couldn't do this anymore. I was already back at work, still up 6 to 8 times a night. And we just looked at ourselves and we said, are we going to live like this forever? Or are we going to do something to change this? Are we going to do something to get our sleep back and to give our daughter the sleep that she deserves so that she can have restorative sleep to grow and to be a healthy baby? So that's what we did. That's what we did. We chose to sleep train because we knew that we could not be good partners to each other and good parents to our daughter without the sleep that we needed to rest, to be the type of parents that we wanted to be, and to have our, frankly, our relationship back. It was so hard. Sleep is something that you don't really think about until you don't have it. And then you realize how fundamental it is to functioning in every regard, but especially in my case, to being a parent. And so ultimately, after doing our research, it was something that we felt would be tough for a short amount of time, but for long-term benefit. And I look back on it now, and that could not be a truer statement. It is so true. It is so true. The amount of time that you have to spend investing in kind of an uncomfortable learning period has so much long-term benefit that you don't even think about that anymore. Once we sleep trained our daughter and we got our sleep back, we we're just like, oh, we're doing that with our second, third, fourth, fifth, a millionth kid. We're doing that like as soon as we feel comfortable doing it, right? So once we decided to do that, it took a few times to actually start, because for me, it physically pained me to hear her cry. And it was so hard for me to do that. We would start sleep training and then I would immediately backpedal because I was like, I feel so awful doing this. I don't want to do this. I'm going to go pick her up. And then I would get back into that vicious cycle. So it took us a few times to actually really be aligned. And thank God for my husband, because at one point he was like, here's your glass of wine, go on a walk, I will do this. And thank God he did that, because he knew that we both wanted the same thing. He knew that we both wanted the same outcome. But as a mom, instinctively, like, you don't like to hear your baby cry. I didn't like to do that, right? And so he was able to really kind of take the lead and hardline me there, send me outside in those really hard moments. And so we finally got it done, and we chose to do the Ferber method, and that's the method we have done with all three of our kids. However, with Jade, our first, that method, and I'll go into it. I'm going to use that method today as the one I'll expand upon. But that method actually ended up agitating her a bit. So the Ferber method involves checking in on your baby and comforting them without picking them up. But those check-ins actually really agitated her to the point where we were just like, all right, this is going to be more effective if we just go full extinction. And if you know sleep training terminology, full extinction means just letting them cry it out. And I know that sounds so awful, but I will go into that. And it was the most effective for her. It was the quickest way that she learned how to fall asleep independently. Sleep training took maybe one and a half nights. And then ever since then, she has slept independently on her own, laid down, wide awake, sleeps 12 hours a night. Even on hard nights where we have sicknesses or sleep regressions, we've always been able to come back to those skills that she's learned on her own. And so the first night, and I've said this before, and I've told this story so many times before, but it's just one that I will always hold on to because it's so important. The first night that I slept through the night, I woke up and I was like, oh my gosh, this is what it feels like to feel normal again. I just woke up with so much mental clarity. I felt normal again. I was like, oh, I'm not crazy. This is not what life is going to be like anymore. This is actually going to be great. Life with a kid is going to be great. I'm not going to be trapped in this vicious no sleep cycle. And once we all started sleeping, we were all happier. I was happy. Jade was happy. Maurice was happy. We were rested. We were well. We could all be there for each other. I could be there for my baby in the way that I've always dreamed of being, not just a walking shell of myself. And it was just the best decision that we could have ever made. So let's go a little bit into the core concepts of sleep training, and then we're going to unpack the method that I've used with all three of my kids. And we did use Ferber. With Jade, we used Ferber plus extinction. And then with our two sons, we used Ferber. And Ferber was really, really well, worked really, really well for both of them. And they both took to it right away. Before we go into kind of the end-to-end of the Ferber method, I want us to go into some really important prerequisites to sleep training that I want you to fully understand and grasp, because this is going to be the key to you deciding to sleep train or deciding if it's not for you. Okay, these are, in my opinion, more important than the actual method that you end up choosing for sleep training, because there's a bunch of sleep training methods, but the prerequisites to doing that, and I like to call them sleep training concepts, if you understand them fully and you choose to agree and align with them, that's going to be the key to your sleep training success, is these prerequisites. And you could very well not agree with them, and that's totally fine. And again, sleep training is not, it's not the right choice for every family. Some families choose other ways to get their sleep through things like co-sleeping, and that's totally fine if that's what works for your family. But if sleep training is something you're open to, these prerequisites are what's going to ultimately determine whether you'll be successful in going through with the sleep training method of your choice or not. So, what are these things? Before you start sleep training, the first thing you need to do is understand your why. So, figuring out why you want to sleep train. Why, like, what do you want to do? What do you want to gain from this? And obviously the biggest one is I want my baby and myself to sleep. Like, yes, that is the ultimate goal, right? That is the ultimate goal. But I want you to think a little bit deeper than that. Think about the things that you are going to gain from not having your baby rely on you to fall asleep. So think about important things like independent sleep skills, right? So is your why, I want my baby to be able to have the confidence and the ability to fall asleep in moments of sickness, in moments where they're going through a really rough patch, and I want them to be able to start developing kind of that self-sufficiency in addition to what I will be there for. I want them to build independent sleep skills so that they can go to a family member's house and have a sleepover with their cousins. I want them to be able to feel confident in their sleep as they go into toddlerhood. And I want them to be able to be on a good schedule so that they can be routine oriented, because that's really important in terms of values for our family. Or is your why, I want my nights back with my husband. I want to be able to have intimacy again. I want to be able to have more than 30 minutes with my husband so that we can reconnect and talk about the things that we like to talk about together. So we can have a game night, so we can eat dinner together, so I don't have to spend hours in my baby's room trying to get them to go to sleep. I want my baby to have those skills that will also enable another important relationship to thrive in my house. I want to be able to have that time again with my husband or my wife. I want my baby to be able to have those skills so that when grandma's over, grandma can have that bonding time with baby and put baby down without having any issue. I want grandma to have a nice bedtime routine with baby, and then baby can put themselves to sleep so mom and dad can go on a date night. Think about those whys. Think about the things that sleep will give you and give you back in your life. Once you start figuring out what those things are, you will be more invested in the solution that sleep training will bring to your family, okay? So think about that as an exercise, because that's a really important part of why you're going to choose to do it. If you're co-sleeping and you want to make the switch, think about, you know, oh, I would like to have a bed back to myself, right? I would like to have my own space again. And there's nothing wrong with that. There really isn't. So, you know, if that's not something that's working for your family, think about, is that your why? So your why can be whatever. Think about what's important to you and what this solution will bring back to you and your family and your baby. The second prerequisite that I want you to do is really understanding if you and your partner are aligned. Are you aligned with the decision to sleep train? If you're not, you need to be. And I don't want to sound harsh, but I think it will be very hard to achieve your why through sleep training if you and your partner are not aligned. It's going to be really, really hard to achieve that. And I don't mean aligned in the sense of, oh, you know, I want to do this method, but my husband wants to do this method. Well, at least you're aligned on sleep training, right? So we're not talking about alignment in terms of methods. We're talking about alignment in terms of we both want these outcomes, and we both agree that sleep training is the way to achieve those outcomes. You both need to be aligned in agreeing that sleep training is the solution. If one of you is not quite there yet, then I think you both need to spend a bit more time achieving that alignment, having that conversation, doing more research, and figuring out what either a compromise is in terms of methods that you guys are comfortable with, or choosing that it's not the right solution for you and finding a different one. But just like everything in family building or family planning, you and your husband, your wife, the person you're building this life with, need to be aligned in this in order for your children to be successful in their sleep training journey. So that part may take a little more time. I've gotten some questions about, well, what do I do if my partner's not on board? You both need to get back to the drawing board first and achieve that alignment, whether it's with sleep training or not. But you both need to be aligned regardless. I don't necessarily think the solution is one parent should sleep train and the other one just kind of goes and, you know, if they disagree, they just kind of step out of the way. I don't think that's the right approach, because you kind of open up the door to resentment, and you open up the door to feeling alone in that, or the person that is not sleep training just feels misaligned, or they disagree with what their partner is doing with their child. This is both your child. This child is both yours and your partner's. So alignment is really, really important here. That way, when it gets hard in the thick of sleep training, you both still have your eye on your why. You guys both know what the outcomes are. One of you can lift up the other in really hard moments, and you know, that alignment is really gonna make or break your sleep training journey. And this last prerequisite that I really want you to take away before you start sleep training is looking at crying in a very different way. Okay. So we're not even going to talk right now about the method that you're choosing to use. It's because there's so many sleep training methods. There's so many funny names for all the sleep training methods. But at its core, it's teaching your kid how to fall asleep independently. But a common denominator across all of those methods is there's probably going to be some crying, right? And that is the crux of sleep training. It's the hardest part, is hearing your baby cry and accepting that they're going to cry. But this is the key that really turned my perspective around with sleep training. You need to think about crying as a form of protest, not necessarily out of a critical need, okay? So when you are making the leap into sleep training and you start with night one, you have to make sure that all of your baby's needs are met. And what I mean by that is the following. Are they clean? So do they have a clean diaper? Are they healthy? Are they not sick? Are they not suffering a cold? Like, are they healthy? Do they have clean clothes? Are they fed? Have they eaten, right? So are they fed? Are they bathed? Are they well? Think about all of their needs, right? Because if you think about crying, especially in the early months, it's usually because of a few things. They're hungry, they've got a dirty diaper, or they don't feel well, okay? So before you start sleep training, before night one, you need to understand that you need to make sure that those needs are met. If you can answer yes to all three of those, my baby's clean, my baby's fed, my baby's well, their needs are met, then they are not crying because of those things, okay? They are crying because they are learning a new skill it's uncomfortable for them. They are protesting or trying to break a habit. Okay. They're crying because they want you. And I know that that sounds really, really sad, but I want you to get the needs out of the way. Okay. So don't associate crying with those critical needs of hunger, dirty diaper, and feeling sick. Those are not needs. Those are not associated with why baby is crying. So get those out of your head. Okay. So if once you start realizing that crying has to do with protesting change, protesting the change of sleep habits and sleep associations, that will enable you to be a bit more open to allowing the crying to continue. It's how they learn. It's how they communicate. Think about your baby saying, but I want my boob to fall asleep. But I want my rocking motion to fall asleep, right? But I want mama's scent or dad's scent to fall asleep. And so those, if you think about it in that way, because they obviously can't say those things out loud, so they're going to cry. Once I wrapped my head around that and that became my perspective, my baby's needs are met. They're crying because they're protesting change. That's when I was able to push forward. And I know it is easier said than done. I've done this 3 times and it's been hard all 3 times. It hasn't gone easier the 3rd time, but the decision to do so has become easier because I know and I've felt the benefit that comes after that. Okay. So that is the most important prerequisite to starting sleep training is knowing that needs are met and crying is just communication of, I don't like this change. But we need to be there for our kids during times of change. We need to trust that they will learn. We need to be there for them during those times of change and seeing them through that. And I know that sounds counterintuitive because being there for them might be like, oh, I want to pick them up and rock them or nurse them back to sleep, right? But then we're stuck in that vicious cycle again, okay? And we're trying to break that cycle and your baby can do it. Your baby can do it. You can do it. We've done it 3 times. I promise you. So those are important prerequisites. Now, when you go into picking your sleep training method, I'm not going to go through all of them because there's so many. You can pick which one sounds the best to you. There's going to be different ways that you can achieve independent sleep. There's the Sleep Lady Shuffle. There's Full Extinction. There's Ferber. There's a bunch of like cute, funny names for sleep training. We chose Ferber because we thought it was a happy medium between Full Extinction and some of the other ones, quote unquote gentle. Some people call them quote unquote gentle sleep training methods, and Ferber is one of them. I'm not going to go super deep into like the history and the background of Ferber, but the core concept of the Ferber method is timed check-ins. So you lay your baby down wide awake at bedtime. You go through bedtime routine. You do your whole bedtime spiel. You lay baby down awake. Do not lay baby down asleep because that defeats the purpose of sleep training. You lay baby down awake, okay? And then see if they fall asleep. They might not. Maybe they're figuring it out. Maybe they're making some noise. At the onset of crying, you follow what's called the Ferber check-in chart. So it involves checking in on your baby during time after a certain interval of time. So you lay your baby down, you exit the room. When crying starts, you let the crying on night one, you let the crying happen. I think it's for something like 3 minutes. After 3 minutes, if baby is crying, you go in, you check on baby for 45 seconds. Checking in is just for reassurance. It's patting baby on the back. It's shushing. So it's reassuring them that you're there. You can do belly rubs. You can do pats on the back if they're sleeping on their tummy. You can talk to them and say, it's okay, baby. I'm here for 45 seconds. No picking up, no rocking, no nursing. 45 seconds of comfort, and then you exit again. Baby is probably going to still be crying, okay? So you follow that and then you kind of repeat the process again. So after 45 seconds, you exit, you follow that next time interval. on night one, I think it's 3 minutes and then 5 minutes and then 5 minutes and then 10, so on and so forth. And then after each interval, if baby's still crying, you can go back in for 45 seconds and check in on baby, reassurance, exit the room again. You do that for as long as it takes until baby falls asleep and puts themselves to sleep, okay? So night one is the shortest interval. So I think it goes 3, 5, 7, 10, 10, 10, 10, 15 or something like that until baby falls asleep. If baby wakes up in the middle of the night, you restart that process all over again. So check in, exit the room, check in, exit the room, comfort until they fall back asleep. They will fall asleep. I promise you, they will fall asleep, and try your best not to cave and pick them up. This is what I did with our daughter the first couple of times. And it took us a few rounds to really kind of be like, all right, we're doing this. Night two, night three, night four, you'll see the intervals of time change. So night two, you start with 5 minutes. Night three, I think you start with 5 or 7 minutes. And then as the nights go on, you'll eventually see your night start with a 10-minute interval, and you will have improvement by that time. So one thing I want you to think about with sleep training is the older your baby is when you start, the longer it's probably going to take, because they're older, they're smarter, they are, you know, they're more willing to protest, they're a little more resistant to change. So with my daughter, I don't know if we're the exception to the rule, but it did take her one and a half to two nights. So that was kind of really a shocker. She was 7 months old. With my son, we felt comfortable to sleep train him at 6 weeks, and we did, and he got it in a couple nights. With our third baby, with our most recent baby, it took about a week, and we did it. We started around the 4 month sleep regression, which for him, it started around the 3.5 month mark. I want to say it took a good 5 to 7 nights of following the Ferber method. But each of those subsequent nights, we saw progress. We saw progress. He was falling asleep in 2 or 3 intervals of that Ferber chart. And during the time that he would wake up in the middle of the night, it would take 1 or 2 intervals and he would fall back asleep and he would put himself to sleep. And so I want you to remember that even if you feel like in that first night it took 2 or 3 hours, just know that if you backpedal, you will lose the progress. And so you shouldn't, like, don't try as hard as you can to not backpedal, because you don't want to lose out on the progress that you've made, okay? So just know that with every subsequent night that you follow the method that you're choosing for sleep training, you are going to see progress, and that this is short-lived and you are almost there. I promise you, you are almost there. So that, in a nutshell, is the Ferber method. And if you have things like regressions, or if you have things like sicknesses, you can always fall back to the same method and you can redo it, restart it, reintroduce it, if you feel like you're regressing a little bit. And you know that it's your foundation, you always go back to it, always stick to it, print out a Ferber chart if you're going to choose Ferber. But you will see progress and you will see your baby start to know what to do when you put them down right awake. So that is the method that we've followed, and it has been so great for all of our kids, and they are fantastic sleepers. So our son right now, he's still sleeping in our room at night. He's got a crib right next to our bed and he puts himself to sleep every single night. I lay him down awake and I just like leave the room and I'm like, all right, peace, see you in 12 hours, and he's great. So it can be done. I promise you it can be done, and it can be done in any of the sleep training methods you do. And the method itself and carrying through the method, I think, is secondary to those prerequisites that I talked about. Being in alignment with your partner, understanding what crying means, meeting those critical needs and knowing that crying is not part of those, And knowing your why and knowing the outcomes that you want to achieve with it and knowing that this will get you there and this will get you those things that you so deserve. Your baby's restorative sleep, your restorative sleep, your nights with your partner back, all the things that are very important to you being a good parent, okay? I know it's a sensitive topic. I know sleep training in a nutshell is not something that everyone agrees with, and that's okay. If you know ultimately what your family is going to benefit from, hold on to that. Hold on to that and do not be apologetic about it. The fact that you are thinking about your child's sleep needs and what you need to be a good parent to them is such an unselfish thing, and we can get what we deserve by doing the hard things. And I know you totally can too. All right, so let's go into some questions. I posted an AMA for this sleep training episode on my Instagram, and I got a lot of questions. So I want to go into them, and I might have gone over some of the responses to this and just kind of into our deep dive just now, but we'll see. All right, so Nathan7 asks, how do you know when it's time to sleep train, especially around the 4-month sleep regression? Great question. And this is going to be, I don't know if it's going to be the answer you're looking for, but it is time when you are ready, okay? So there is no perfect time for sleep training. Many parents choose to do it around the 4-month sleep regression because you're just not getting sleep anyway, but it is time to sleep train when you are ready and your family is ready to sleep train. Okay, so not every baby is going to be ready by a certain time, and you're not going to be ready by a certain age. It's going to be ready. This is the right time for when you feel capable to go through with it, and when you have all of those prerequisites to sleep training under your belt. Okay. So that could be at a year old, it could be at 6 weeks. And I know some of you are probably thinking, but why would I sleep train if baby still needs to eat during the night? That's one of the questions on here, and we'll go through it. But those things have nothing to do with each other. I know that sounds weird, but they don't. Next question. This is also from Nathan7. How do I deal with guilt for any type of cry it out? I'm nervous we may have to. Yes. So even going through that prerequisite on crying and knowing that crying is just a form of communication and protest, there's still a little bit of mom guilt. It means that you are normal and that you love your baby. But as much as you can, I want you to think about crying as a means of protesting change and as a means of learning a new skill. And think about it in the way of like, you should know that your baby is capable of this. No baby has ever been harmed during sleep training. There have been instances where babies have cried really, really hard to the point of reflux or vomiting. And that sounds really awful, but that's a function of hard crying. It's not a function of sleep training. So think about it that way. Your baby is capable of doing this, and crying is their way of communicating. This question is from Slate Nails Michelle. How do I change my 2-week-old's cluster feeding to daytime rather than night? Okay, so this one's not too much about sleep training, but okay, so your baby is 2 weeks old. That's still super, super young. That 2-week mark, man, I've got all the empathy in the world for you, because that first 3-4 weeks, they still don't really know up from down. They don't know day from night, all their hours of the day. Their equilibrium is not even really set yet. So cluster feeding is very, very normal at this age. And I only encourage you to know that it doesn't last. I wouldn't focus too much right now on shifting things to the right, you know, day and night. Like, try and just get through your day to establish things like calories during the day. Just try to make sure you're feeding baby every 2 hours during the day so that they're getting enough calories so they can eventually shift over to things like cutting out night feedings. But 2 weeks is still very young. I'm just encouraging you to get through those days and feed frequently during the day. But cluster feeding, so feeding every 30 minutes to an hour, is just very normal at that age. Baby is really kind of wanting to be back in the womb. So try as much as you can to just get through those tough nights. It will not last forever, I promise. Slate Nails Michelle also asks, I have a 2-week-old that will not sleep unless she's being held. Does this go away? Yes, it does. I promise you it does. 2 weeks is really young, and try as much as you can to do things like baby wearing. Let baby sleep on you while you're wearing baby, especially if you need to do things around the house or if you're trying to go on a walk. You can wear baby as much as possible. But yes, it does get better. It does go away. You can eventually achieve independent sleep through things like sleep training. Next question. Casper.kt asks, how do you know when to drop night feedings? Not sure if baby is waking up to feed or needs me. Yes, so let's talk about this one. So oftentimes moms will think, my baby is still waking up in the middle of the night to eat. While that could be true, especially if your baby still needs to eat at night according to their feeding schedule, and according if whether your pediatrician still recommends they're eating at nighttime. But I can guarantee you that some of these instances is baby just waking up for that sleep association of needing mommy's booby to go back to sleep. They might not be hungry. They might just need you to fall back asleep because that's how they fell asleep to begin with. Okay. So in terms of how to know when to drop night feedings, consult your pediatrician. Ask them what growth has looked like for your baby. Ask them, are we in a spot to be able to drop night feedings? Can we wean off of the night feedings? What does my baby's growth look like? Can we constrain calories to the daytime? The answer will probably be yes. If they are thriving, growth is really good. And that way you'll know in the middle of the night that they're waking up not to eat really, but to use that association to fall back asleep, right? So you can start night weaning, and then when they wake up, you can introduce your sleep training method, okay? So night weaning and sleep training, while they go hand in hand, are two completely separate things. Jamie Zachary asks, did you sleep train with or without pacifier and how? All right, so I actually have no experiences with the passy. It's so weird. All three of my kids have refused the pacifier. They're all like finger babies. So like they're thumb suckers, they're finger suckers. Their pacifiers are on their hands. They've never taken a pacifier. So I actually am not too versed in this, but I would say I look at a pacifier as another sleep crutch. Unfortunately, if they are waking up crying, looking for it, and you want to completely remove sleep crutches or associations with sleep training, in my recommendation, I would probably do it without the pacifier. Little Nikki X3 asks, when do you start establishing sleep training? So if you're asking me, it was different for all three kids. So my daughter was 7 months old. I'm looking back, I wish we would have done it sooner. Our second son was 6 weeks old. And you might be wondering why we did that early. He was just ready. He moved into his room very early and he slept way better that way. And he was ready and we were ready and we just knew, and it didn't interrupt our scheduled feedings because he was still eating every 2 to 3 hours. So I would still wake him to eat during the middle of the night and then I would put him back to sleep. We would do our sleep training method and it was great. So if your baby still needs feeds in the middle of the night, that's fine. That doesn't have anything to do with sleep training. You can still wake them for their scheduled feed, put them back down, and if they need to fall asleep independently, just do your sleep training method, and that has nothing to do with night feedings. So my son was 6 weeks old, and then our youngest son, he was 4 months old. Carla MJ7 asks, did you co-sleep before sleep training? What sleep practices did you follow before sleep training? Yes. So we co-slept with our daughter for a little while before we even knew what sleep training was. And again, I will say that it works for many families, and many families make this work for years. And it's something that works well for their family. It is not something that worked well for us. I personally never felt comfortable or safe co-sleeping with our daughter in the bed. We used one of those infant loungers. This is not something that I recommend. It's something that you can look into yourself, but it has not been recommended in terms of safe sleep using those loungers. But it's what we did to get by. It's what we did. It's what I chose to do out of desperation. She did not sleep in her bassinet. I did not know how to build good sleep habits. I knew nothing about it. And so we had her swaddled in a lounger in our bed for a little while before really doing the research and what the right solution was for our family in terms of sleep training. I'm not going to spend the time going into co-sleeping practices. It's not something that I am really well versed in. I won't go into that one. Eli Hopeful Tay asks, do I have to sleep train? How, when you already feel so exhausted with all the things? I wish I could give you a huge hug right now because I just hear you in your question and I just hear how tough things must be right now. It's just so many things to think through. If even thinking about the effort it will take to sleep train right now is too much on your stress level to the point where it will do more harm thinking through that than good, then it's totally fine to not be ready yet. You don't have to do anything you're not comfortable with. If you're not comfortable with it, or if you haven't done, you know, if you haven't thought through all the prerequisites that we talked through today, then don't start yet. Don't, you know, it's okay to not be ready to do those things. But one thing I do want to challenge you in thinking about is, yes, I see and I hear the exhaustion in that question. I want you to think about the benefit that sleep will bring to you in those in that level of exhaustion. What will sleep do to all those other things? Will it make them feel a little lighter? Will you have the rest that you deserve? And could sleep training be the solution to achieving those things? Kayla Kitten asks, sleep training my 6-month-old tomorrow. Yay, go you! I feed him back to sleep 2 to 3 times a night. Should I go full extinction? So I think you're asking about the Feeding to Sleep Association. If they are still requiring night feeds, it doesn't sound like it is. It sounds like you're using feeding as an association to fall back asleep. You can go full extinction. You can. Yes, you can. You can also just follow the method that you're going to be using. If it's something where they are used to the nighttime calories, I would say you could wean bit by bit, or you can just full cold turkey wean. That's totally fine too. I am wishing you a very speedy sleep training journey, and I'm so enthused for you and excited for all of the sleep you and your baby are going to get back. All right, let's do one more and then we will wrap it up for today. Nadia Wadia asks, how do you get your partner on board when they have reservations? I think you need to go through a lot of those initial exercises together. Think about what you want your nights to look like again. Think about, go back to thinking about your why. Why do you want baby to be able to do this by themselves? What will you achieve by doing those things? What do you want your evenings to look like again? What do you want your relationship to look like again? What do you want baby to be able to do to be able to have the capability of doing? Once you start talking through those whys, you start thinking about the solutions to get there. And I think there just needs to be a bit more understanding of each other and where those reservations are coming from, and talking through what's important to you both and your family. Look at the problem together, hear each other out gently, and come to an alignment. Maybe sleep training is not the solution. Maybe you're thinking about it in a way that might not be, you know, the solution that they want. So hear them out too, but start not just by thinking about convincing them to sleep train, start talking about what you want things to look like that they don't look like right now. And I think you might make a little bit more headway there. Wow, this was amazing. These questions are so great. And I hear every single one of them, and I want to thank you for taking the time to ask them. I do have some regular AMA questions that we can go into as well before we wrap up episode 2. So let's take some time to answer them. So these are non-sleep training related that I want to go through. Okay. Brianne Nicole asks, what are ways a partner can support you while new baby is nursing and while you're pumping? Oh my gosh, so many things. Let's think about all the things that you can enable your partner to do that are just as valuable to making a healthy environment for you and baby. This is things like changing, bathing, things that also promote bonding, rocking, baby wearing, so you can, you know, go do something for yourself or go and even get things like house chores done. I'm a big fan of dad's baby wearing, especially if you're like my husband, he's got really broad shoulders, looking into different baby carriers that they can, you know, kind of do. It's a really great way for baby bonding. So just think about all the things that are still very involved with baby that don't involve feeding, that will also promote healthy bonding and your reliance on your partner in things that you might just always want to do for yourself. You got to let them help in ways that are equally as important as feeding. Mrs. Lydia Allstat asks, how do I get back into exercise postpartum? Struggling to find my groove again. Oh, girl, you and me both. Start walking. Start walking and get a step tracker. So if you have an Apple Watch or just a Fitbit or anything, walking, walking, walking. It's actually the best thing you can do. It's good for your cortisol levels, especially in postpartum. You might have high cortisol. Start walking. Get a step count goal a day. 5,000 steps to start, then 7,500, then 10,000. When you start aiming for 10,000 steps a day, that's going to be the most sustainable long-term way to get that weight off and keep it off. So I would say set yourself a step goal, invest in a new pair of running shoes or walking shoes, and just start walking every single day. Get some sunshine, get that good stuff in you, and have a step goal. First time mama here, which breast pump do you think is the best out there in the current market? So I'm actually not a huge breast pump expert. I only have the ones that I don't want to go out and buy a ton of breast pumps. So I'll partially answer this. The best breast pump on the market is one that you can plug into the wall. Now, I don't want to hate on my wearables because I love my wearables for what they are. But I love a traditional breast pump that you can plug into the wall because it's always going to be the most effective and the most efficient. The wearables will generally take a longer time to empty you. They generally are not as effective as a traditional pump that you'll get free through insurance. So that's just my opinion. And I saved this question for last because I love it so much. Jess Posh asks, what's your nationality and what breastfeeding myths do you follow from it? So I think you might have met ethnicity, but nationality-wise, I'm American. But ethnicity-wise, I'm a bit of a hodgepodge of things. My mom is Filipino. My dad is Mexican, Native American, and Irish. I think that's it. European. But I come from a huge Filipino family, and there are definitely breastfeeding myths that they have adapted to or have had for a long time. And I don't follow any of them, but I'll just go through a couple funny ones. So some common breastfeeding myths on the Filipino side is if you've got big boobs, you'll produce more milk, which is not true. If you're sick, you shouldn't breastfeed, which is not true. If you're tired, you shouldn't breastfeed, which is so funny to me. And you shouldn't sleep with your arms up because that'll reduce your milk supply. So I sleep with my arms up every single night and I've got great milk supply. So don't follow that one. All right. We went through so much today and I'm so happy that you stuck this out with me. This was such a deep dive into sleep training. I hope you learned a lot and I hope you're a little bit more open to the idea of starting your sleep training journey. And if not, that's totally fine. It's not the right solution for everyone, but it is a solution that will work for everyone if you are open to it. So I want to be able to have kind of a follow-up. If you have any follow-up questions to this episode, I want you to send me a DM either to my podcast Instagram or on my regular Instagram page. So at She Is Radiant Podcast or at Janae McClure, my DMs are always open. If you're interested in joining my She Is Radiant community for $4.99 a month after the $2.49 a month promo that I have for my next 5 subscribers, you're more than welcome to. I do prioritize those DMs. So anytime you ask me a question, I can see my subscribers and I always get to those questions first. So please join our community. It's a really great group of like-minded women that are going through their motherhood journey. We have great social chats. So if you have any follow-up questions about this episode, just hop in my DMs, join my She Is Radiant community. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to watch this or listen to this on whatever podcast platform you're on. I would love to close out this episode. As always, I know it's only episode 2 of season 2, but I want to pray for you as we exit this episode so that you can have a great week ahead. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for my sister who's here listening to this today. And if she's with her boyfriend, please be with them and their family unit. Please be with their children. Please just watch over them and cover them. I ask that you please bring them health and security and that you ease any worries or fears they may be going through, Lord. I ask that you please give them the desires of their heart as they go through maybe some tough challenges in parenthood and in motherhood. If they're thinking about the outcomes that they want to see for themselves during a rough patch, please let them know that you're always there to walk with them and enable them and give them everything that they need to achieve those things, Lord. I ask that you please bring them their health and fulfillment in this life that they're building. And just please be with this radiant woman on the other side of this screen and always walk with her and hold her hand. And just know that she has a sister here in me, Lord, and comfort her if she needs it. And thank you so much for the time that we've spent here today. In your name, amen. Thank you so much for joining me on episode 2 of She Is Radiant with Janae McClure. I will see you next time. If you could do me a favor and submit a rating and a review or a written review wherever you're listening to this, but most specifically on Apple Podcasts, I love to see your feedback, your words, your reviews, just so I know what to improve on and so I can reach more women through this podcast. Thank you so much for being here and I'll see you next time.